From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, inviting you to join us as we meet our guests and encourage you to be part of the discussion. Our topic today is charter schools in North Carolina. What role should they play within the public school system, and how is that role changing? The level of financial transparency required of charter schools is a topic of intense debate both in Raleigh and among members of the news media. Senate Bill 793, the charter school bill, would make charter schools subject to open meetings and public records laws. State leaders are working out differences on that bill in a conference committee. Just last week, the State Board of Education approved a revised charter school application that makes some company financial information more public. Critics equate the lack of transparency to a lack of accountability in return for public funds. The Star News recently launched its own investigation into the financial structure of the Roger Bacon Academy, the for-profit management company that oversees three local charter schools. On today's Coastline, we'll explore what public education experts say the role of charter schools should be in the state. We'll also examine those questions that have arisen around transparency, accountability, and whether equal access to these schools exists in practice or is just theoretical. Joining us now in the studio is Nick Rhodes, former New Hanover County School Board member and current board member of Public Schools First North Carolina, an advocacy group for public schools that is challenging the role and the scope of charter schools. Nick Rhodes is also a member of WHQR's Community Advisory Board. Welcome to Coastline, Nick Rhodes.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us by phone today from Charlotte, he's a former state senator and the current executive director of the North Carolina Charter Public Charter Schools Association. There were too many charters in that title. It's the Charter Public Schools Association, an advocacy group for charter schools in the state. Eddie Goodall, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel.
During the next hour, you're invited to join our discussion. Do you have a child in the public school system, in a charter school? How did you choose your child's current school, and are you happy with that decision? Send us an email at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr, and in a few minutes, we'll open the phone lines as well. So first of all, there's a lot of terminology in this discussion that can get misused or misunderstood. So let's establish what we're talking about. Eddie Goodall from North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association, how would you define a charter school in this state?
A charter school is a school that's created legislatively. There has to be a contract between the state and the body that is going to govern the school. That school is independent of the local school district, meaning it can make decisions on its own. A charter school is a public school, let's not forget. It is free, tuition-free to anyone in the state that could otherwise go to a public school. And typically, the schools are a little smaller. The idea is for them to be innovative, to do, in certain cases, some things differently to see if they work. And the idea, I think, long-term is to take these ideas or what works and implement those across the board or to at least the extent possible to improve public education as a whole. I've said a lot of times, and I think a lot of my colleagues agree, that The charter school education is not necessarily about the children in charter school seats. It's about all the rest. I think the idea was to improve, raise the tide for public education in general.
Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First. First of all, would you agree with that description of what a charter school is and what it should be? I know Mr. Goodall pointed out that this is supposed to be something of a laboratory and then best practices are eventually implemented in the traditional public schools. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, and I would agree with his general description of a charter school. However, I think the charter schools have gotten away from their original mission of doing that, and they were created to provide education, innovative techniques and instruction for students that are in danger of academic failure and students who are academically gifted, and make proof of concept of those ideas and bring those back into the public school setting. I think they have moved far from that charter today.
You mentioned, Eddie Goodall, that charter schools are free. They're public schools in the state. How do kids, for people who aren't familiar with the concept here, how do kids get into charter schools here?
Their parents apply. Charter schools have they have different school years. Each school determines it has to have a same number of hours and days in the year, but the boards typically determine their schedules. So right now it's up to parents to find charter schools that they are close to or they would like for their child to go to, and go to those websites, find out when application periods, open enrollment is, and then apply. And in some cases, there are too many people that apply for the number of seats, in which case they have a lottery. And in other cases, not. But it's up to the parent to find the schools and learn about the schools, compare those to the traditional public school close by, and make decisions. It provides a choice for the parent.
And just to be clear about where the two of you are coming from, Nick Rhodes, you are a board member of Public Schools First NC. Can you describe the mission of that organization?
Yes, the mission of Public Schools First North Carolina is to spread the word across North Carolina and be an advocate for public schools. Our charter is to inform the parents, teachers, and our community about Public Schools First, and for them to then become an advocate for Public Schools First. We have a number of people who are engaged in our activities, and we feel strongly that public schools are critical to a growing economy and maintaining the vitality of our community. And I think most people would agree with that. Our goal is to educate and inform North Carolinians about the critical issues that impact our schools and our teachers, our students, and engage all stakeholders in supporting quality public schools. And that's what we are about.
And Eddie Goodall, you initially started with a different charter school advocacy group, broke off from that, and started North Carolina Public Charter Schools Association. Can you tell us about that? Why did you start your own organization?
Yes, while there was a cap of 100, as you both know, and by the way, I want to thank Nick and acknowledge his being on a board of education. That is one of the toughest jobs, from being in state senate and dealing with county commissioners and state and local boards. That is one of the very toughest jobs there is, and so we should all appreciate those people that are willing to give their time to school boards. But because of the cap, again, the charter school movement was, I guess, small enough. There wasn't that type of interest across the country to looking at North Carolina's charter sector, I guess, early. But when the cap was appeared to possibly be lifted, there was more interest, and some folks invited me to be the first full-time employee advocating for charter schools with a group called the North Carolina Public Charter Schools North Carolina Alliance for Public Charter Schools. I very happily took that job because I was just coming out of the Senate. I decided I had to actually earn money, a little bit more than I was making in the Senate. And so I took that job. I did that for 2 years, and without getting into a lot of details, but the main problem was we had a board member that wanted to be on the Charter School Advisory Council that was created by Senate Bill 8, the bill that lifted the charter cap. I wanted to be on the council and wanted to work then as a regulator and be the chair of our alliance, our membership organization. So I felt like, and our employees felt like, that if you were the regulator, you shouldn't be regulating those whom you are soliciting conference attendance from and dues and membership. So we felt like that conflict was just too severe to be part of, so we formed another organization.
You formed another organization, and didn't you also file a complaint against Baker Mitchell, who founded the Charter Day School Incorporated School Network in Brunswick, New Hanover, and Columbus counties?
I did. I filed against two charter school advisory board members, and the council became the board. By the way, we're using different terms, but the council was originally created. It was changed to the board with Senate Bill 337, which passed last summer, that the original appointees of the council were by Beverly Perdue, and so I think there might have been some political reasons, I guess, for the creation of the board. But at any rate, Baker Mitchell was not the board member when was not the board chair of the Alliance when we formed this organization, but he was on the board. Was added on the board the day I left, as a matter of fact. And so the first 2 years of the council, they had a different conflict of interest policy that was very weak. It was not the conflict of interest policy that followed the State Ethics Commission rules. So when this Senate, when this board, new board was created, the law included it with those that were had the answer to the state ethics law. And I believe what happened specifically was we think two members of the Charter School Advisory Board should have recused themselves in a vote and did not, and that was the line. Before that, we had complained, but...
Mr. Goodall, we have just a few seconds left we go to break, and we'll finish the story in a moment. I just want to say you wrote in your complaint, according to the Star News, Mitchell violated the State Ethics Act by using his role on the Charter School Advisory Board to enhance his own business interests. We're going to talk about that idea. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about charter schools in North Carolina. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 910-343-1138. Send emails to coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and joining me now in the studio is Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First North Carolina. With us by phone from Charlotte is the Executive Director of North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association, Eddie Goodall. We're talking about charter schools and the role they play in public education. If you have a question, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using Coastline HQR. And Eddie Goodall, you were just explaining why you felt there was a conflict of interest between someone who sat on the Charter School Advisory Board and someone who is actually responsible for running a for-profit company that manages charter schools.
Well, Rachel, what I actually was talking about was the conflict, I think, exists because one that sits on the board to make decisions for charter schools shouldn't sit on a board of an organization that solicits memberships from charter schools, a charter membership organization. The Alliance is, of course, not a for-profit. It's a non-profit organization that wants schools to be members and come to conferences. And so if Mr. Mitchell is on a charter school advisory board that makes decisions about the renewals of those charters and decisions involving those charters, I think that's a conflict. So I did not say that he... The conflict was the fact that he runs a for-profit company. Just to make that clear to your listeners.
That is an important point to make clear, and that does lead into a lot of the public controversy that we've been hearing lately. We've been reading it in the news. Questions around transparency, and there is a bill in conference committee right now that would change some of that. But the Star News has filed several public records requests regarding financial documents, requesting the salaries of employees within the Roger Bacon Academy. And I should say that we sought input for this show from the leadership at Roger Bacon and never received a response. But some people would argue that if it's saving the taxpayers money, then why is something like salary information so important to the public? Why should that be public information, Nick Rhodes?
Because they are using public dollars. Anyone who works for the state of North Carolina, Sarah is public. There's a website that you can go to. I don't have the exact web description, but you can Google it, and you can find anyone that works for the state of North Carolina by name and by salary. That's the kind of transparency the state requires, and I think there's a state law that says that. For example, if you were a professor at UNCW, you could Google that person's name and go to that website and find exactly what, by name, their salary. So I don't think charter school teachers, administrators, or support staff should be any different than anyone else in the state who receives public money.
And Governor Pat McCrory agrees with you
on
that point. He said it's indefensible to withhold this information. You can't have it both ways. And if you want public money, we need to know the salaries. Do you agree with that, Eddie Goodall?
Actually, I don't. Just taking those facts that we just talked about, and here's why. I certainly, of all people, believe in transparency. I tried to get a bill for years to televise the NC Senate, call it NC SPAN, and let people see exactly what was happening there. So I'm for sunshine. There's no doubt about it. But here are some of the problems. And first of all, I think it's going to be settled anyway. So it's going to be a moot point. But charters were, from the beginning, supposed to be different. We intentionally did not make them instrumentalities or subdivisions of state government. We could have. But we could have made them part of state government. We didn't. We said, boards, go out and form your own 501c3, have your own bylaws, and do that. And we said, you don't need a teacher salary schedule. You don't need tenure. Do something different. Create, save money, educate kids, and come back and let's see the results. They did that. And one of the downsides to now disclosing salaries, and by the way, this is not about disclosing salaries to Nick or the people in Wilmington. It's about John, a second grade teacher, finding out what Jane, a second grade teacher in the same school, is making. That's all it's about. It never was about public transparency. The schools were given incentive to hire people at what they could get the best teachers for, not go on the state salary schedule, but to pay more if they wanted to, or pay less, whatever agreement the school and the teacher came to agree upon. They did that. And now we have different one-year contracts, different salary schedules. Some schools use the state salary schedule. Others don't. So now we've come back and changed the rules and said, okay, now we're going to disclose among these teachers what each other makes. After again, setting up those basically small businesses that have run this way for years, I don't know that it's not a bad idea in the long run, and I'm not saying it's all right or wrong. I'm just saying that's the essence of it. It's the problem internally with the business. I don't know where Nick works, but it may be in his company. Maybe they don't have a salary schedule. Maybe Nick makes a little more than somebody. Maybe he's a lot better than people in his own position, and they wouldn't like to disclose that. We have many nonprofits in North Carolina, 501c3s, that they're not required to disclose anything. What we said in the statutes, the state statutes, is we said somewhere that charter schools are going to be public schools because we want them to participate in the state retirement plan and the state health plan, and so therefore they're public school teachers, or some language similar to that. So in actuality, they're a hybrid. We've been saying they're public schools for years, but they are a hybrid. They're technically not for some purposes, but are for other purposes. We need to figure out what's best. The problem I have, and I'll try to be more succinct. I know I'm taking too much time. But the problem I have is that the reason they were set up like this was purposeful. We didn't want to necessarily be forced into a salary schedule. By doing this, the unintended consequence of Senate Bill 793 and this logic is that we're going to take schools and we're going to morph them back towards where they came from with salary schedules. Because now, if everybody knows what everybody makes, the logic might be that every third grade teacher with 6 years experience gets the same amount of money. So that's the kind of concept. That's what government does sometimes when it tries to reach far for a public purpose, but overlooks other purposes.
Eddie Goodall, I understand. You're saying this is a hybrid. It's a for-profit business model, and what you hope comes from that is perhaps what comes from competition in the free market.
Right.
Nick Rhodes, what's the issue with that from where you sit?
Well, first of all, I don't think charter schools should be set up as a for-profit entity. They are receiving public money. And I don't think anyone who works for a charter school should be any different than someone who works for a traditional public school. those people are still receiving public dollars, our taxpayer dollars. So I don't understand the opposition for making those salaries by name public, because they are public. I just don't buy that argument that it will create dissension among the staff, because you can go out to New Hanover High School or Hargett High School. There's no dissension among staff members. They know they don't all make the same salary because of different years of experience. So I just don't buy that argument. I think it's a hollow argument, actually.
And one of the issues around that, one of the issues that Public Schools First NC has with the current structure of charter schools, is that there are also not the same standardized requirements for teachers. Only 50% of teachers are required to be licensed. And I think an argument in favor of that is you can perhaps have someone who's worked in the world, who has a particular area of expertise, who doesn't have to go through the bureaucratic red tape of getting licensed as a teacher, but would be very effective in a classroom setting. Is that right, Eddie Goodall?
Well, I think, first of all, if one is not supportive of charter schools, I would not make the argument that charter schools provide less service than traditional public schools. It's odd that one would use that, would even bring that up. It's odd that they would use it in a negative light against charters. You would think that the organization maybe NICS with would say, from a positive standpoint, look at those charters. They don't all have to be certified teachers, and ours do. That's a great thing. So that's kind of odd just to start with. But that's really a difficult subject for me. I'm not an educator. I am told and have been told by many people that there are so many qualified people that can come into schools and know a subject, have life experiences as well as educational experience, and can do great jobs. I really can't address that maybe as well as Nick can, to be honest. So,
Nick Rhodes, less service. Can you define that?
Yes. If you just look at their charter, they provide less service. They don't provide transportation. They don't provide lunch, and they don't provide a lot of the curriculum offerings that public schools offer. Some of them don't provide services for exceptional students. There are a number of services that they don't provide. So clearly they don't provide the same services as the traditional public schools. Now, this subject about if I have work experience, I can teach. That is a misnomer. Teaching is a trained skill. Some say it's an art. I have two master's degrees, one in education and one in business administration, with an undergraduate degree in economics. I would never put myself out as someone who could teach. I don't have the skills to teach. And just because I've had a career in industry and as well as a career in the military, I don't qualify to be a teacher. You require a lot of training to be a teacher. And I think that's a shortcoming on the part of charter schools who accept people who may have some life experiences. Now, North Carolina had a program where you could have troops to teach, people who were coming from the military. They had to go through some training. They had a program out at UNCW called North Carolina, I think it's called North Carolina Teach. I can't remember the specific name of it. But anyway, they were taking people who had college degrees who were not qualified to teach, put them through a program, and then placed them in the classroom.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about charter schools in North Carolina's public education system. What role should they play? What level of transparency should be required of them? If you have a child in the public school system, in a charter school, we'd like to hear from you. How did you choose your child's current school? And are you happy with that decision? Here to answer your questions, we have Eddie Goodall of the North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association with us by phone from Charlotte, and Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First NC. The number is 343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. There is a message posted on the Roger Bacon Academy's website talking about value to taxpayers, which is part of this accountability and transparency issue. It says the 2013 audit for the North Carolina Local Government Commission revealed that Charter Day School, that's one of Roger Bacon Academy's schools, received only $7,399 per pupil compared to over $10,000 per pupil received by Brunswick County, saving taxpayers over $2.5 million last year alone while better educating their students. And even though Charter Day School receives zero taxpayer funds for school construction, it also has zero long-term debt, while Brunswick County taxpayers are on the hook for $72 million in debt, requiring additional annual debt service and interest payments of over $8 million. Nick Rhodes, that sounds like fiscal responsibility. Could one argue that a better product, better student test scores would cause demand for a product to rise, increasing profitability? And tell us again what you see as the pitfall behind the profit motive.
What are the results? Are their test scores demonstrably different than the test scores of traditional public schools? If they are not, then they are not saving anything. It's about educating our youngsters here in North Carolina, and that's one of the things that Public School First is about. We have to move forward and be more progressive in educating our kids. It's not about the profit motive, because if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. We have to forget about the profit movement. I realize that I'm a taxpayer in North Carolina, too. I don't want to raise taxpayer dollars, but I think we need to look at the process. I spent a part of my career in a large professional services organization looking at process improvement, how to improve the process. There's more to the process than just the dollars spent. What are we getting for the dollars that we spent? You can get a cheap product for a low price, but is that what you really want? And I think that's not a good standard for our public education system.
Eddie Goodall, what are the current curriculum requirements for charter schools? What are the standards by which students are measured?
Well, in an effort to create that experiment, if you will, in a charter school for teachers, and we talk about choice for parents. We also talk about choice for teachers. We have removed some of the requirements for curriculum and pedagogy, and we've said to schools, basically, you can teach like you want to. However, you've got to take the same tests and assessments that the state of North Carolina gives all public schools, provides for all public schools. So basically, charter schools create their own instruction models, which may follow or may not follow other public schools in their LEA or in their school district, or they can come up with something different, but they have to have the same tests. The difference is charter schools have a floor that they have to meet, and if they don't, they go into a category that has intervention and then can be closed, as some have recently. And that is, if they don't achieve growth 2 out of 3 years and have fewer than 60% of the kids at grade level, they're closed. And so charters have a significant life or death criteria for performance. They don't exist if they don't perform. So whether or not that formula is exactly right, and I don't think it is. I think there's some problems with that formula. But at any rate, charter schools do have an academic performance standard they have to meet that traditional public schools don't. And I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying that is a little different. It's very tough on some schools, but we wanted that rigor.
Right. And Nick Rhodes, you agree, actually, that charter schools overall have relatively good test scores, but you say that if you disaggregate those numbers, there's a different story?
Well, that's throughout North Carolina in the public school system. We have, right here in New Hanover County, if you look at our overall scores, we have really, really good scores if you look at it at the aggregate level. But if you disaggregate those numbers, you look at some of our economically disadvantaged students and minority students, they don't perform that well at all. So we have to look at those numbers. But, Larisha, I'd like to get back to the charter school, the charter school's mission. The charter school's mission was to provide opportunity and choice for parents. Of course, one size does not fit all. We acknowledge that. And to provide an opportunity for students that are at risk for academic failure and academically gifted students, and to look at innovation and qualitative measures that could be brought back into the public schools to make the overall system better. What we have now, this thing has proliferated into a two-tier system in North Carolina, charters and public schools. If we had more collaboration between these two schools and go back to the mission that charters were created for, I think we'd have a much better charter school program and we'd have a much better public schools program. I think this two-tier system is not good for public education in North Carolina.
And near the top of the show, Eddie Goodall had mentioned that one of the roles of charter schools was to develop best practices. It seems like both of you acknowledge that that's an idea. Once something is established as a best practice, then it is supposed to be implemented within the traditional public school system. So I want to explore that idea. If we're doing it at any level, why we might not be, what else we could do to further that idea. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Today, we're talking about charter schools in North Carolina. What role should they play in the public school system? What level of transparency should be required of them? We're talking with Eddie Goodall of the North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association and Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First NC. If you have a child in the public school system, we'd like to hear from you. How did you choose your child's current school? Are you happy with your decision? And you can give us a call at 343-1138. We're taking emails at coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us at coastlinehqr. And also, when we come back from the break, we have a few callers on the line. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline, if you can't tell by the music. We are talking about charter schools. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with us now in the studio is Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First NC. With us by phone from Charlotte is the Executive Director of North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association, Eddie Goodall. If you have a child in the public school system in a charter school, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. Email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using Coastline. And before we went to break, Nick Rhodes and Eddie Goodall, we talked about this original idea, the idea behind the purpose of charter schools, an experimental laboratory that is free to try new things, find best practices, and then implement those best practices in traditional public school systems. Eddie Goodall, how does that work when there becomes unlimited competition? Are we then, is there anything that holds us to that original idea?
Well, first of all, let me say that when people ask me what's better, a charter school or a traditional public school, I always say, which one are you talking about? And the reason is parents, they may care, but it doesn't really make any difference what statistics are in the Los Angeles Unified School District versus Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. What counts are the options, choices that parent has. What are the two choices? Do they have a district school down the street? They maybe have a district magnet, and they have a charter school over here. That's the whole universe of choices that parent has if they can't move to another neighborhood. So I just want to remind listeners that that's what really counts is the choices there are, and that there are many great, obviously, traditional public schools and many great charter schools. The questions are, what's best for your child? But of course, I think we're doing well. Probably wouldn't be on the show if I didn't think the charter movement was doing well. We have probably 60,000 people on waiting lists. We have about 60,000 kids, children on waiting lists. We have about 60,000 children in 152 charter schools. We have so we know we have demand. We know parents want those. We see that across the country. North Carolina actually has a lower percentage of charter schools and schools per student. Students in charter schools for the total population than most states, but we see it across the country. And we've seen change as a result of that, positive change in CMS here under Heath Morrison's leadership. We had our superintendent in Charlotte. We had 10 magnet schools open this year, this summer, next month. 10 magnet schools in one school district. We also had 11 area, nine CMS charter schools open this summer. So are they related? I think they are. And I don't think every county has open 10 magnet schools. Nick, certainly you probably wouldn't be able to do that. But But I think he has seen that competition. I think it has been positive. And I think when his school start saying, the parents in the charter start saying, I want to go to this CMS school over here because I really heard it's good, and they start leaving the charter schools, that's when we really have a dynamic that has shown that it has worked. We've created competition, and again, the tide has risen for everybody, and that's what those of us in this movement want to happen. And yes, I think it's happening.
That's the ultimate vision for you, seeing the tide rise for everybody, yes, and hence lift all boats. We're talking about charter schools in North Carolina's public education system. We'd like to hear from you, 910-343-1138. Let's talk a little bit about access.
I agree with them on the choice question. When I was on the school board here in New Hanover County, I said the best advocate for a child is the parent or the guardian. And one size does not fit all, and we need to look at what works best for a student. And back to the charter schools, the topic of the day, if we looked at that laboratory and best practices part of it and bring out proof of concept from these best practices, I think that would provide better choice. It's like bringing the scientific products and prototypes from the laboratory to industry and the implementation. That's where we get the choice. We don't get the choice by just putting a school next door. We are looking at programs is what provides that choice and what fits best for those youngsters and preparing them for life.
And you also say, and Public Schools First NC says, that there is an access issue for charter schools. Theoretically, they're open to all kids. They're free. But what do you see as some of the barriers?
Well, one of the key barriers, if you look at economically disadvantaged students, they don't provide transportation. So part of the original mission was to provide opportunities for those youngsters, and those youngsters are denied that access simply because they can't get to school, because the parents don't have the means to get them there. The lunch part of it, they don't not required to provide lunch. So that eliminates those students that the mission of charter schools was supposed to serve. So by definition, they are denying these students access because of the services they do not provide to these youngsters.
So this charter school bill that's in conference committee right now would encourage the state board to give preference to charter school applications that demonstrate the capability to provide comprehensive learning experiences to students identified by the applicants, and this is the language in the bill, identified by the applicants as at risk of academic failure. Would that idea, Eddie Goodall, address this problem?
I'm sorry, that is in Senate Bill 793?
Correct.
I'm sorry, read that one more time. It's been a while since it's been in conference committee now for several weeks. It's been a while since I've read the bill.
Right. The charter school bill would encourage the state board to give preference to applications that demonstrate the capability to provide comprehensive learning experiences to students identified by the applicants as at risk of academic failure. Does that accomplish what Nick Rhodes is talking about?
And that's something similar to that. It's been in the law since 1996. We have another provision somewhere else that says if there are more than one application and you're debating those, you give preference to the one addressing kids at risk for academic failure. And yes, we certainly want to start with those most at risk. Absolutely. Nobody disagrees with that. I've never met anybody that disagrees with that across the country. We do, however, I do personally think that charter schools are for all students, all geographies, all races, all income levels. And while we give preference to charter schools that address those most at risk for having lives that end up in jail and underpaying jobs, we certainly address those first. But we also not at the total exclusion of all the others. So I think there's a scale that's needed in North Carolina, and I know Nick's going to disagree with this. I think there's a scale that we need that causes school districts to change to get those kids back, a certain scale that rocks the boat, if you will, like it did here in CMS, and caused those magnets to open. I see that as where we need to go, and that volume of charter schools. You know, and he was talking about access. Let's address that, if I can, on my side. If we don't have charter schools next door to the district school, then I really don't see the choice. I don't understand that. And there are several reasons. I won't get into the mechanical reasons. A lot of charters don't have buses and the federal lunch program. Some of them do, of course. But there are some mechanical reasons. First, the schools have to take students from all over the state. Some schools have students from 9 different counties, or 11 different counties, rather. So it's almost an impossibility. Secondly, I've never heard one parent call me and complain about their child not being able to get to a charter school. Never. In the years I've been involved with charter schools and the one we helped start, that's not a complaint. The demographics of charter schools mirror that of the LEAs, the school districts. We are underserving Hispanic students in North Carolina in charter schools, and we need to fix that. But in terms of African Americans, for example, we've got about the same percentage. Typically, a charter school and a district school side by side are having the same populations percentage-wise, and I think it's misleading to say that kids at risk can't get to charter schools. For one thing, there are many charter schools in low-income areas that are attracting minority students and kids at risk. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Nick Rhodes, how do you see that? Do you see that happening here in the Cape Fear region?
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. When I said about having a school next door to another school, we could have that. We are talking about the programs that they offer, not the physical location itself. Now, when it comes to where these schools are located, if you look at the demographics of charter schools in North Carolina, most are racially isolated. You have them in predominantly minority neighborhoods or minority neighborhoods.
I just want to be clear about what you're saying. So are you saying that whether it's a charter school or a traditional public school in this area, we're still talking about a highly segregated school population?
Well, let's talk about the charter schools for a moment. Charter schools, if you look at the demographics of them, most of them are racially isolated and where they're located. And they don't mirror the population of the area in which they are located. So that, again, is a limitation on the part of charter schools. I am not opposed to the concept of charter schools. I am looking at the implementation, and I think the implementation has strayed far from its mission. I think it's a great idea to look at it as a laboratory and have that collaboration with the local public school system. I think that's a good model. I don't know who thought it up, but I think it's a good model. But that is not the implementation. So we're having a two-tier system. If we had the original model, I think that would improve public school system across not only North Carolina but across the state. I mean, across the country. We have gotten to a point now where we have a proliferation of schools, and they don't adhere to that mission. We have schools springing up everywhere. Unless they provide something that of a demonstrably a qualitative advancement above what is already offered, then I don't see any reason to have them.
And just to use the Roger Bacon Academy, this is a local organization that runs 3 charter schools in the area. And fans of these schools point to better test scores relative to many public schools. But once again, the complaint from Public Schools First NC, and this is on a website, they say charter school enrollment is self-selecting in that parents must be both motivated and logistically able to take advantage of school choice. Because charter schools do not have to provide transportation or lunches, they automatically exclude a sizable percentage of the economically disadvantaged students, most often cited as the primary beneficiaries of school choice. So, Eddie Goodall, when you say that you've never gotten a complaint from a parent about a kid not being able to get to a charter school, are we also including that population that might have parents or guardians that...
Absolutely. And charter schools, I think I'll disagree with Nick. I think they do mirror the population of the area they're in. What is confusing is originally in the law said that the charter schools needed to mirror the population of the LEA, the whole school district. So a school in West Charlotte, for example, I keep using here, school in West Charlotte would have to mirror the percentages of all of Mecklenburg or all Charlotte-Mecklenburg County. That didn't happen, but they certainly are mirroring the neighborhoods they're in. And North Carolina has 250 traditional public schools with over 90% minority. That is a pattern that hasn't changed. And as a society, do we need to do something about it? Obviously, we do. And obviously, most of us agree that education is the answer to that societal problem we have. And that's the difference in income level and the outcomes we're having. So we do want to work on that. I know time's getting close, but I do want to say that I think one of the answers is to step back from this competition, this conflict we kind of have internally, step back, and let's come up with a different model. Let's look at ways to give school districts the ability to do some things like charters have and see if they don't earn those kids back. I'm all for that. I think we're going to see something in the legislature next year that will do something. It might not create a charter school, but it may be very similar. It may be something parents want. I think we can all agree that we're all, you know, for whatever satisfies the parents.
So, yes, Nick Rhodes.
Rachel, I agree that it's a comment about we should step back and take a look at the whole process. That's my thesis exactly. If we step back and look at it and see what charters are providing and use those proof of concept and those best practices, we will get what parents want and we will have a better education system as opposed to having a two-tier education system. I agree with them on that point that we should step back and take a look at the whole process.
Eddie Goodall, in the few minutes that we have left, can you tell us, you just alluded to some legislation that might be coming down the pike. What are you talking about?
Well, it actually existed last year but was never heard. Some school districts, the Board of Education of New Hanover, I want them to have more authority themselves, ability themselves, decision-making, into how they run their school system for their taxpayers, their parents, their constituents. And I think to do that, we've got to change the rules a little bit. I think some of the things that apply to charters, like not having to follow the teacher's salary schedule, or myriad rules that I'm sure Nick has to deal with in his superintendent, Tim Markley down there. You know, they need to be relieved of some of that and be given the ability to be a little innovative themselves and do some things. They actually can't right now, and so that I think that's problematic. I think they ought to have more authority to make their own decisions.
Well, that's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Nick Rhodes of Public Schools First NC and Eddie Goodall of the North Carolina Charter Public Schools Association. Thanks to our listeners. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Join us next week. Cleve Callison hosts a discussion about language gaucherie, gaffes, linguistic linguini. That's not al dente. Sorry about that. That's next week on Wednesday, July 23rd at 2 p.m. here on WHQR 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Lindsay McGrath. Our music editor is Bob Workman. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline.